Coming up, what an excellent day for the history of the devil. Part 24. Howdy, folks, and welcome to another episode of The Exorcist Minute, a show where we normally examine, extrapolate, and excavate The Exorcist, minute by terrifying minute. My name is Lester Ryan Clark.
And I'm Keenan Diaz.
And we are still your holy guides on this journey through the history of the devil. And today, we are covering books 11 and 12 of John Milton's epic poem, Paradise Lost. Yes, folks, we are wrapping up this poem. We want to give Milton his due, but also there's no Satan in these last two books. And while they're not bad, they are certainly a little bit less devilish than befits our History of the Devil podcast. Mm-hmm. So we're still going to cover them, but we're going to do the last two at the same in the same episode. Mm-hmm. So you're getting two episodes for one.
Right, but everything that's going to happen here is the repercussions of what Satan did, and all these nice things, these nice, these bad, these good, these happy, all this stuff. It's thanks Satan.
Yeah. Hashtag thanks Satan.
As Wreck-It right. Ralph says, yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Right. It's Satine. But yeah, right? That's the subtitle to this poem, right? This is why we can't have nice things. But first, let's do a little recap. Last time, you'll remember the angels returned to heaven with the news that Adam and Eve had disobeyed God and ate of the forbidden fruit. Mm-hmm. But Lucas, God... said not to worry, that was all planned from the beginning.
It was a trilogy from the start. It was a trilogy. Right. But it was really three sets of trilogies.
Yeah, it's a septology. is that the actual word, Lord? I was like, well, that's how they say it on Coruscant, so. All right. He sends the sun down to cast judgment, but also show mercy on Adam and Eve, mm-hmm. but not the snake. Fuck that snake.
And you know what? Every snake after that snake, too.
Yeah. And his children is children's children's children. For 3 months. Meanwhile, sin and death decide to build a highway to hell, or from hell, mm-hmm. I guess. And on the way to Earth, they meet Papa Satan, returning from his victory. They congratulate each other on all their evil deeds, and Satan sends his kids off to wreak havoc on the world of man. Mm. They grow up so fast. Satan makes a grand entrance at Pandemonium and in even grander speech, but is met only with hisses from the crowd, which he realizes all too late have been turned into serpents, even as he himself has also changed. Thus, the first annual Snake Week was invented. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, sin and death have entered Eden, and God then orders all of creation to be altered with CG. No. To be altered to reflect man's fallen state.
Which means no Muppets.
Which means no Muppets. Which is why we have earthquakes, floods, and special editions.
Versions you've never seen.
Yeah. And versions you'll never see again. Adam and Eve have death on their minds, but they instead resolve to go to God with their sins and their faults and ask for mercy. Mm-hmm. And that is where we pick up today, folks. Let's read this first argument, the argument of book 11. Mm-hmm. Here we go. The Son of God presents to his Father the prayers of our first parents, now repenting, and intercedes for them. God accepts them, but declares that they must no longer abide in paradise, sends Michael with a band of cherubim to dispossess them, but first to reveal to Adam future things. Michael comes down. Adam shows to Eve certain ominous signs. He discerns Michael's approach, goes out to meet him. The angel denounces their departure, Eve's lamentation. Adam pleads, but submits. The angel leads him up to a high hill, sets before him in vision what shall happen till the flood.
But look, there's an apostrophe in Eve's, but not in Michael's.
No, there's an apostrophe in happen. like Cap'n Crunch.
That's right.
Jeez. Yeah. So yeah, folks, that's what we got in the first of these two books. So let's get into it. We pick up immediately where we left off with Adam and Eve praying, which means, again, no Milton at the top here. No storyteller easing us back into things. Remember, he's been gone since the last book. Mm-hmm. And it's such a subtle thing. It's not pointed out, not even by scholars like Rogers. But if you notice it, it can give you a chill, like in the last book, or it can make you sad, like in this book. Hmm. But yeah, we cut to up above the clouds, and God and the Son are hearing the prayers of Adam and Eve. And the Son presents them to God, much like a defense attorney, which, you know, we talked about the earliest iteration of Satan, you know, the Satan, like, you know, lowercase s Satan, being like a prosecuting attorney. So here, Jesus is on the other side of that, speaking for us. And like an attorney, he has a way with words. He opens up with, "See, Father, what first fruits on earth are sprung from thy implanted grace in man." He's turning that fruit imagery on its head. He's like, this is the fruit we should focus on.
Mm-hmm. And God is easily confused by multiple trees at the same time or multiple fruits.
Milton's God, right?
Yes.
As is evidenced in this thing. But wait, Keenan. I think we have been wrong all along.
Uh-oh.
I wrote it down here. You'll see what I mean in just a second.
Okay.
Hold on to your butts, folks. Hold on to your apples from the tree of knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so the Son says, since they are no longer good with words, please let me interpret for them. And he once again offers to have their punishment transferred to him. But in this book, he feels more like a separate character than in previous books. Like we met him in book 3 and he and God were talking and it seemed like they both knew what the other was going to say, mm-hmm. or like they were the same character. And Milton has intentionally or unintentionally called the Son God in the creation retelling and in other places. But then we get that first actual debate in the poem, Adam and Eve's argument. And that's like a line in the sand. And from there, now all the dialogue seems more real. And from there, Adam and Eve fall into, you know, lower communication. But it also seems like heavenly discourse has also changed. And the Son is presenting their case before God in this way that they do not seem like the same character anymore. Mm-hmm. Even though perhaps, like, you know, ironically, the last line of his proposition is, quote, "Made one with me as I with thee am one."
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. And we get a different God here. Firstly, Milton says he is without cloud.
Mm-hmm. So when it said without cloud, I was thinking, oh, that must not be literally God is in a cloud like those little guys in Mario Brothers. And then here he's been hit by a turtle shell and he's without his cloud. That must be something else. That must mean, like, you know, for now, we see through a glass darkly, but then face to face. I thought that's what this was. But the Dartmouth Reading Room that I'm reading at milton.host@dartmouth.edu says, in the Hebrew Bible, God is often said to appear in a cloud. So that is literally he is supposedly retroactively, he's been in the cloud the whole time. And now this time he's not.
The whole time?
The whole time. A cloud, you, the Lord thy God, a cloud the whole time.
Yahweh. I have to go. We have to go. I have to go right now. But yeah, I kind of read it as like, you know, his face wasn't clouded obscurely, like we can read his face now, you know?
Yeah, we're being too sophisticated. It literally means he's not inside of a physical cloud.
Wow. Well, there we go. But yeah, in any case, it seems like now the father and the son have this different talking relationship. Mm-hmm. And also for us, it invokes this closer, more personal, more compassionate figure. And God says that he wants to be merciful and he accepts the son's proposal. However, because he designed paradise so that paradise itself would purge all impure things, Adam and Eve can no longer stay. And remember, folks, Rogers says this is what Milton has been building towards. By having Raphael talk about creation as if it were an independent living organism, we set the stage for Eden itself to reject Adam and Eve. And for Milton, this takes at least some of the blame off of God, right? Mm-hmm. And despite, you know, what I was saying in previous books, this sort of does make God fallible. In that he can't seem to override this. Mm-hmm. He told his kids not to touch the stove. They touched it. And he can't take away the burn on their fingers, mm-hmm. which, you know, that's another way to look at it, right? The son is saying, you know, they shouldn't be put in time out for that. But now God is saying, right, but they can't stay in the kitchen.
It's so interesting. That's not how I imagine the Christian God working, that there are rules that he has to obey, you know?
Right.
Yeah, like my religion, it was philosophy 120, one of the most important classes I've ever taken in my life. And the professor, Dr. Wallace, was a Episcopalian minister as well. Mm-hmm. And he said, so which do you think? We made us go down. Every single person had to answer this question. He said, is the law good because God commands it? Or is God good because he commands good laws?
Huh.
Right. So like, is thou shalt not kill, is that the right thing? And then God is good because he's preaching the right law? Mm. Or have we accepted that God is correct and everything he says is good? Like, is the morality good because it's preached by God?
Mm. Do you want me to?
Sure. Answer that? Okay. If you have an answer to this unanswerable question, yes.
No. I don't think it can be answered, right. But the one thing I will say is that second one, that leads down a very, very, very dangerous road, I think.
That anything that God says is good?
Right.
Yeah.
I think that has caused more harm than good, mm-hmm. that whole philosophy. It's like, well, this is right because God says it. Mm-hmm. That's the thing that a lot of people hide behind if they want to like persecute other people or other people and stuff like that. It's right. Like, well, it's, you know, it's in the Bible. God says it. So it must be good. Well, it must be right.
Yeah. Like, you know, there are these like food prohibitions in Judaism and in Islam and other religions, right? They're like,
right.
You know, you can't eat pigs, for instance. And mm-hmm. that was probably a good idea for the people who lived in that area, you know, hundreds and thousands of years ago. And mm-hmm. so then God commanded it and it was a good law for them. They did not get sick from these animals like pigs and shellfish and bats and that kind of thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
But now it's not the case that we need to, you know, avoid eating pigs because they are going to sicken us, right? We have ways of butchering pigs that aren't going to sicken us. So, mm-hmm. but God commanded it. And so now that's still the rule because God commanded it, right? You know, if you're reading this in a cynical way and not reading it like a reverent mm-hmm. way, yeah.
Well, I mean, like, no, but I guess that's the job of all of us is to, and that's such a fascinating thing because like as we humans are reading this other thing written by a human mm-hmm. like many, many, many years ago, we have to decide is like, okay, is it because it is unholy or mm-hmm. is it because it was like at the time unsafe, right? Because there's not going to be any differentiation. There's not going to be like, you know, if God had said, always look both ways before crossing mm-hmm. the street, right? We would take that as like, well, God said it. That is like, it's, you're going to go to hell mm-hmm. if you don't look both ways before you cross the street versus like there's no delineation between, hey, do this because safety mm-hmm. versus, hey, do this because I am the Lord, and this is...
But he also said things like, you know, don't cheat on your wife and don't steal. And those are good things that, are you pretty much universally agreed upon, right? But he said those and now they're holy. Take the Sabbath day and use it to think about God. So don't work 7 days a week and you know, kill yourself, you know, by stressing yourself out, and have time to reflect. And that's a good law.
Yeah.
Right. But now we imbue with holiness. And I don't know, because there's a lot of, you know, controversy. Circumcision is now controversial. You know, there are people who are like circumcision prohibitionists and that kind of thing.
Right.
But like, you know, that was God said to circumcise your children, and that's a sign of the covenant. And so, do that.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I don't know if there was a, you know, a corresponding like public health mandate for that at that time.
No, possibly. I mean, it that's the stuff that just like fascinates me. I could dip into a book or like fall into a web page about that kind of stuff. And it's like, oh yeah, the reason they shaved their heads was because there was like a, you know, like some kind of like louse problem or something like that. Or, you know.
Yeah. That's all very interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. But so Dr. Wallace, the professor in my philosophy 120 class, history of world religions or intro to world religions, he was using that example or this question, you know, the Socratic question of going around asking us all that to introduce us to the idea of Confucianism. Because the faith tradition we had talked about up until then were presented to its followers, right, as like, hey, this is the holiness, this comes from a holy seer, a prophet, or God it's himself, right? So all of the religions we had talked to at that point were like, this is good because the law is spoken to you by someone who is good, who is the epitome of goodness, whether that was Jehovah or like even Buddha or the Hindu gods and that kind of thing. Right? But in Confucianism, it was like Confucius is not a god. He is a philosopher, and he is good because he says good things, not the other way around. And so that was how we sort of he used that opportunity to ask us that question. Yeah.
I like that. And you can like in that way, you can say it's like, oh yeah, Confucius would say that because he is a good person and like he would say this good thing that matches up. But you can't do that with like if you're arguing for like thou shalt not kill is only good because God said it. Then you can't be like, oh yeah, God would say that. No, like God, like whatever God says.
Whatever God says is right. Right? Yeah.
He could be like thou shalt not kill, but then also thou shalt eat walnuts on Wednesdays.
Right.
And you're like, those things are equally good. Like,
right. Exactly. Yeah. Don't eat meat on Fridays because God says so. Yeah. That's a good thing. Right. It's a holy thing. Yeah. Yeah. So Milton's God, I don't understand here how Milton is hand wringing and being like, oh, I'd love to want to kind of try to help you, you kids, but there are rules around here.
Yeah. I think he's trying. I think, again, I don't think anybody's ever going to solve this. It's because you know, it's the problem of evil, right? Like, why does evil exist if God is all three of those things, right? If he's all powerful, all knowing, and all good, how and why does evil exist? And we try to answer it with the introduction of like free will. It's like, oh yeah, you know, humans have free will, but then that creates a whole nother problem separate, like the problem of free will. If God is all knowing, how does free will work?
Yeah,
because he would know what we're going to do, you know.
And he does. He does already know that in Milton's version. And then in Milton's version, right, it's like, hey, don't do this thing. It would be really disrespectful if you did it, right? Like, that would be a sign of your disloyalty. Don't eat this this fruit or that fruit or whatever fruit. I don't know. Don't eat one of these trees' fruits is bad. Don't eat it. And then the ultimate evil tricks them, which is different, again, from Genesis. Because in Genesis, it's not the ultimate evil. It's just a talking snake.
Just a talking snake, right? Yeah.
But then the ultimate evil tricks them on purpose in order to screw with God. And God is like, well, that means that you are abandoned forever and ever. Amen. Right? Which is, again, different from the Genesis version, which is that Adam and Eve were naive and they were tricked by this serpent. But it's not like the big bad or anything like that. That could have happened, you know, if they didn't do it then, there might have been a talking capybara who comes by next week and is like, oh, I ate the fruit, right?
Oh, I wish we had waited for the talking capybara.
right? Like it's not the ultimate test. They fail the first right. test, and you know yes. that's very, very different from a milk test.
It's a little bit more. So in the Genesis version, it's a little bit more on them.
Yeah, totally.
Then yeah, this is the way Milton's writing it. It's like Satan. If not for Satan, mm-hmm. they would have been pure and good,
right.
and they wouldn't have sinned. But like Satan is just, he's so wily and mm-hmm. so rascally.
Yeah, that even despite all of their counsel, sometimes from Jesus himself telling right. them not to do this, they still were tricked.
Yeah. 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 Mm. I still like, see, that's the one thing I'm holding on to mm-hmm. is like, as I was writing this, I was like, oh, that's a really good metaphor, is they're in the kitchen and God has like told them, it's like, don't touch the stove. It's hot.
Yeah.
And they can't like, cause he can't explain to, it's like, he's like, I can't, you'll only know after the fact.
Right. And you know? I'll send my buddy Raphael and you could ask him about the history of stoves.
Yeah.
To your heart's
content. And he's going to explain to you about like fire, and he's going to explain heartburn, right. and he's going to do all this stuff, right? And it's not going to help. And then someone's going to trick you into touching that stove. And instead of like, but that's, I like that because that's not him punishing them. Mm-hmm. They punished themselves mm-hmm. by like, they got burned. Like he didn't create the burn, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And maybe now he's like, okay, they need to be forever banished from the kitchen, you know? Mm-hmm. But in like, so that they are safe, mm-hmm, you know?
Right.
Yeah. So I can see that. And I can see now the son being like, oh, you know, don't yell at them, mm-hmm. dad, you know, just to, you know, and then, you know, God being like, okay, well, they got to get out of here. Yeah. And they're going to do it again.
Well, like, you know, this is why human beings are inferior to cats. My sister is like, don't let your cats walk on the stove after you've been cooking. And I'm like, they would not touch where it is hot. And they just never have. You don't have to explain it to them. Mm-hmm. They just understand as they're yeah. walking. Oh, that's hot over there. I will not put my foot down there.
Yeah. You notice, folks, that in Cat Genesis, this story is completely absent because no cat mm-hmm. would be that fucking stupid to eat of the fruit.
Right.
They'd just like, no.
It would see that snake coming and it would punch it in the face repeatedly.
Mm-hmm. Do the little skibbity paps. I just learned that.
I like that.
Yeah. You know exactly what I'm saying when I say
oh,
that,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, we could have had a Satan capybara.
We just weren't patient enough.
Right. Folks, Google image capybara and just, you know, look at that. Look at the Prince of Darkness there with his, with his little cheeks. It's even better than a panda.
Oh, yeah, they're better.
It looks like a Pixar character come to life. Anyway.
Yeah, the Pixar capybara works down at the fuzzy factory making uh-huh, fuzzy uh-huh. all day. And mm-hmm, he's like, mm-hmm. I just don't understand why we need to make fuzzy all day. There must be more to this life than just fuzzy. And they're mm-hmm. like, oh, Corey.
Corey capybara.
Corey capybara. You just don't understand. What could you possibly want beyond fuzzy?
Remember our motto. Fuzzy is as fuzzy does he.
Something's not right about that motto. Right. And then he goes and he discovers the history of the fuzzy world and discovers that motto used to be, right, fuzzy is as fuzzy was. And there's some yes. secret plan back mm-hmm, there to make everyone just care about fuzzy.
Right, right. And it turns out that the foreman of the fuzzy mm-hmm. factory was once a bright young capybara like the fuck is his name?
Corey.
I already forgot. Once a bright young capybara like Corey. Until his dreams were crushed.
Oh, and then in the special world, Corey has to partner up with like the opposite of fuzz, right? It's some squishy, like oozy animal. Oh, yeah, it's like a snail right? or slug. It's slug it's without a shell.
A slug. He's like, ew. And he has to like he, you know, the slug sings a song mm-hmm. about, you know, the benefits of being goopy. And for a while, mm-hmm. you know, Corey.
There we go. This is a classic.
He forgets himself,
right?
And he becomes like a goopy capybara, and he's like, "Wait a minute, no! Like, who am I trying to be? This isn't me. I'm Fuzzy." That's
right. And his little sluggy friend Margot Robbie, right? His little sluggy friend has to convince him to to get back out there. Yeah.
Yeah.
And Corey is probably Dev Patel, I think. And,
Probably.
They have to learn that, they have to be themselves, whatever that is.
Yeah. Right. Just be yourself. Right. You be a talking snake. Don't worry about, what mankind says about you ever after. you were just like hanging out.
Yeah. You were sleeping.
Yeah. Anyway, but then, so God calls a council, and all the angels gather, and he announces that Adam and Eve have become like them, knowing good and evil. And by doing so, they have fallen under evil's influence, and now they must be shown out of Eden, quote, "Least therefore his now bolder hand reach also of the tree of life, and eat, and live forever." Dream, at least, to live forever.
Now, wait just a goddamn minute here.
I'm holding my breath.
I'm gonna look at this text. Are you kidding me?
Kenan? Finally.
Wait a second.
I think we have an answer about these goddamn trees.
The tree of life and eat. You're right. Here it is.
Turns out they are two different trees.
All right.
I guess they're both in the center.
That's not the right place for them.
And that thing that we read about God kicking them out so they don't eat from the tree of life and live forever is also mentioned here. And remember how neither of us remembered this being a thing.
Yeah.
But Kenan, here it is in Genesis 3:22-24. Listen,
who are you
going to
believe?
Listen. This is Genesis.
All right.
And the Lord God said, "The man has now become like one of us, knowing good and evil. He must not be allowed to reach out his hand and take also from the tree of life and eat and live forever."
Well, that's like exactly what Milton's saying.
I have never heard this before.
We've been bears, seen bears, but
this
for the Bible.
This is the Mandela effect of all Mandela effect. Like, what?
Well, I mean, I read this in this book, and then again, like, my eyes kind of gloss over in this thing, but there it is. Tree with a capital T, of life with a capital L, and eat, and live forever, dream at least to live forever, et cetera, in Milton's,
And that's the one difference, right? Mm-hmm. So Milton's God adds that little thing. He says, dream at least to live forever, implying that that won't actually happen.
Okay.
But Adam and Eve might think it'll happen and be tempted to eat the fruit. And that right there is a nice addition by Milton, which changes it from God being like one of those selfish, jealous, polytheistic gods, like Zeus, who doesn't want to share power, to a father who knows better. It almost implies that something even worse would happen if they ate from that tree. And God's like, no, get them out of here before they hurt themselves even more.
Yeah, but if your father had the power to snap his fingers and the stove goes into somebody else's house, like, why don't you just move the tree of life or it's not... God, it doth protesting too much, I would say.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm still reeling over this tree of life thing being in Genesis.
I believe you. I see it now.
It's but again, I think it's like I just realized I almost said apples and oranges. But no, because I was arguing, it's like, make him fallible, and then all of this makes sense. Make him love Adam and Eve so much that he's blind to their potential to sin, mm-hmm. right? But here, what Milton seems to be doing is making him fallible in this way where once he has written the rules of Eden, he can't change them.
Oh, I don't believe that.
Again, we're like differentiating between like Milton's right. God and then God, right?
Did he throw away and the codes to the tree?
I don't know.
He can't just wrap this tree of life in plastic.
It seems not. It seems like this is something that he can't. This is my like bending over backwards to try to make God a kinder character, is that he can't fix this.
So, but even in Genesis, so then what's the big deal if they do eat from the tree of life and live forever? Why is that such a big problem?
That I do not know. This is like, I learned we this just learned this week. Right,
exactly.
And now I'm like, wait, was the snake right?
I guess so. We got
it's like,
a lot
if you
of
eat this, you will be like God. Like what? Right, right. Like,
yeah, I mean, living forever is, I would not say that is like God, but yeah, that's what the snake said.
Yeah.
But no. But that's what he said about the tree of knowledge of good and evil would make you like God.
Yes, he said the tree of knowledge, which that can also, you can be like, well, in some ways, like they're already like God in many ways.
Right.
And so actually, I never even thought of that. Like when you say you'll be like God, the implication is like you'll be all powerful.
Yeah, that's what
you'll
I would
be able
say.
To like replace God. Right. But
if I say someone is God-like. Yes.
Yeah, but it could be, it's like, oh, you'll be like God, meaning you'll know what evil is and what good is. You know, it's not much of a superpower, but it's the truth. It's like the right. snake didn't cheat you, you know, like he told the truth.
Right. Yeah, but cats don't know good from evil and, you know, capybaras don't know good from evil. So.
I mean, you know, I've seen some cats, I think. None of your cats, Keenan. Like, your cats are all, you know.
They're all evil, you're right.
Yeah. And I don't know, maybe capybaras are just, like, so good at being evil. I wouldn't want to live forever.
That's a question I have a lot.
Like, with my physical body, like.
Well, what if they stuck you at 40 when you're at the height of your, you know, physical prowess and everything? And
oh, I like how you said 40. That was very nice. Yeah.
No. I understand not wanting to age for 400 years.
Yeah.
But what if they kept you the same?
No, I get you. I've thought about this a lot as well. And then someone on a podcast totally ruined it for me. And they said, so in your normal lifespan, Keenan, the odds of you getting struck by lightning, the odds of you falling into a grain thresher.
Oh, God.
The odds of you somehow becoming trapped in an enclosed space from which you cannot get out of, right? All of these things are, you know, they're very, very rare in a normal human's lifespan, right? Immediately introduce infinity into the equation. Now, all of those are going to happen eventually.
Right. For most people, they just happen once, if at all.
Yeah, right? But there will be, like, if you are living forever, there will be a time when you stupidly walk into a bank vault and now what are you going to do? Right? Or you find yourself in a fridge that has sunk to the bottom of the ocean. You're on a cruise and you guys are playing hide and seek and it's one of those old like freezer units and you're like, they'll never find me in here. And they never do for a million years. Mm-hmm. And then I don't know, the seas dry up and somebody, if there's anybody, they open up that freezer unit and you're like, oh my God, finally. Right. But guess what? It's infinity. It's just going to happen again.
Well, you have to just go around the world and make sure no one invents fridges.
Yeah, right?
Yeah. But I don't know. I would like to be able to read every book and watch every movie.
That would be, yeah. Like, that's what I'm saying. Like give me a good span. give me an exit clause, you know? Like make me, you know, one of Tolkien's elves, right?
What they just decide... That's it.
They can like normally mm-hmm. they live forever, like if nothing yeah. happens to them. But they can be killed mm-hmm. or they can die of broken hearts. Actually, no, don't make me one of one of Tolkien's elves. But yeah. Make me a vampire. I'll be a vampire, you know? Mm-hmm. And I just like just, you know, hop on over to the nearest garlic store when I'm tired of it all, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, just walk into the sunlight.
Yeah, just have a day on the beach. It'll be like my last day, right? And then I'm good, right? But in between then, yeah, I'll see every movie, right? I will, you know, read every book. Mm-hmm. I will try every job, right? Yeah, that sounds good. I like that. Why aren't we all vampires?
Yeah, Lester down at the vampire factory.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. That was the tree that the capybara was guarding. He's like, nobody wants to, you know, over here. Right? Anyway. And yeah, so God orders Michael to go down there and break the news gently to them and to comfort Adam with visions of their future. Basically, show him everything that's going to happen up to their redemption by Jesus. Mm-hmm. Right? So Michael heads out with some cherubim and we cut to Adam and Eve. And Adam says that he feels somehow like their prayers have been heard and will be answered. And Eve says she's just happy that Adam and she are still loving each other and can continue living in this garden, even though they must die soon, apparently. Mm. And as if on cue, the sky darkens, even though it had just become morning. And far off, they see the formerly friendly animals, now ferocious and wild, attacking each other. Specifically, a lion is chasing mm-hmm. a hart, which I think is that's a male deer, right?
Right, H-A-R-T.
Yeah, right. Right. And heading toward the gates of Eden, and Adam wonders if this is it, right? This is how they're going to die. But then he sees something descending from heaven.
Well, now, I mean, if you think this is scary for Adam and Eve, imagine this deer who didn't understand that right. predators existed. Yeah.
Yeah. He was just, this was, you know, Larry and Tom, and they were just talking about like it's like all right, there's a, you know that snake over there. It's like, mm-hmm. hey Tom, what are you growling for? Yeah. Hey Tom, you're pawing the ground over there, and you're slobbering something fierce. Oh jeez,
yeah, why are you tucking that bib into your neck fur, and why are you roughing that knife and fork back and forth together while you lick your lips? What's this about, Tom?
Is this another one of your crazy games, Tom? Yeah, now he's just running from his best friend, and it's like, man. All because of that fucking snake.
That fucking asshole. All right. Something yeah. or someone.
Uh-huh. Descending from heaven.
From heaven.
Yeah. And so in the distance, they see Michael alight on the hill with his angels. He leaves them and starts heading towards Adam and Eve. And Adam notes how different he seems from Raphael. He mm-hmm. he doesn't seem like you could like sit down and chat with him. He seems to have this solemnity and authority to him. So he goes out to meet Michael, and like with Raphael, he bows, but Michael doesn't bow back, which mm-hmm. I was like, wait a minute. This is Michael. This is the guy who like, you know, bifurcated Satan for presuming to be like God. This right. is Matt Damon, right? And I think Milton is trying to differentiate him from Raphael. He's in that he's not chatty. He's not affable. He's all business. He's mm-hmm. He's that lawful good. He's like pre-existential crisis Buzz Lightyear. you know, when he's talking about Star Command, you know. And I think that's what's going on here. You know, he's cutting Adam off like, I don't need that. That's not necessary, right? And he gives them the news. He says, your prayers have been heard. Your sentence of death has been lifted for now, maybe even forever, but you can't stay in the garden.
Okay, so he's just the facts. So he's not like Raphael. He is like Leonardo.
Exactly.
Yes. Raph, we don't have time for partying.
No.
No way. That's Mike. Sorry.
That's Mike. Right.
It's Raph.
This is Mike.
No. Michelangelo the turtle.
With Michelangelo means Michael the angel. Is this another who's on first? Like,
you're telling me Michelangelo means uh-huh. Michael Angel.
I don't know. I actually don't know that. But it
that
just,
must be what that means.
It has to be. How is it not?
Well, that had not occurred to me. But those certainly are two words put together back to back. And so that must mean
it
a combination of those. Yes.
It can't be anything other. You know, it's not like Michael with a bunch of angles.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, that must be correct. I'm just assuming that's right.
Yeah. Folks, tell us if we're wrong. Tell us if Michelangelo does not mean Michael the Angel.
Michelangelo is a given name that's a combination of the Hebrew name Michael, he who uh-huh. resembles God, yeah. and the Greek name Angelo, meaning messenger. So, yes, it is.
Okay. There we go.
Michael the Angel.
Yeah. There we go. So he is as off model as you can be.
That's right. He's not eating pizza. He's not, you know.
I was talking about the turtle is off model, but okay, sure.
No. This Michael, he's wrong. Someone named Michelangelo should be a party dude.
I guess.
It should be hopping onto his back and spinning on his shell at the slightest good news. Yes.
Yeah. But yeah, so this is not that Michael. Yeah.
Mm-hmm, right.
And not even, and what I'm trying to get at is this isn't even theology Michael. This is Milton's Michael.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But yeah, so he breaks the news, and this is devastating news for both Adam and Eve. Like, they were thinking that they'd be able to spend the rest of their short lives here in Eden. Mm-hmm. Eve reflects that this is a fate worse than death, to be expelled from their home. And Adam says the thing he'll miss most is seeing God in the garden. And this is really sad. Like, he laments that he didn't talk to God more. Mm-hmm. Or express his thanks and his love to his face. But Michael tells him that God will still be with them and they will still sense him if they really try. But it won't be like before. Mm-hmm. So then Michael puts Eve to sleep. Again, Milton, come on. Like, and Michael takes Adam to the top of the highest hill in Eden and shows him all the world spread out below them. And Milton specifically compares this to Satan showing Jesus all the kingdoms of the earth, right? Mm-hmm. Michael is doing the same thing, but he's showing him all that is to come. And he cleanses Adam's eyes with some, like, water from the well of the tree of life. Yeah, you didn't know was a thing, did you?
Who dug the well?
I don't know. It's a mystery.
All right. Not a spring.
No. Nope.
A well.
Yeah, the well. I don't know. I don't know if well and spring just meant the same thing back then.
They do not. That's impossible.
I don't know. Search your feelings, Keenan. Yeah, but anyway, now Adam can see all the sins of all the kingdoms of the world. And mm-hmm. the first thing he sees is the first death. It's a murder. One young man killing another, and Michael tells Adam that they are brothers, and they are Adam's children. Mm-hmm. And Adam reflects that he now finally knows what death is, but Michael tells him that death will come in many forms, not just this one. There will be war and famine and disease, but also people will die peacefully of old age if they're lucky and if they practice moderation. But even then, their bodies will become old and tired and gray. And Adam reflects how this seems like a defacing of man made in God's image. And Michael says the defacing had already been done by this point. Mm-hmm. And he shows Adam another vision, this one of good, honest men being distracted from their work and tempted into lust by women. Because, of course, Milton would do something like this.
Yeah, don't be tempted while I put your wife to sleep back at the house.
Yeah.
Don't be out here getting tempted by women.
Yeah. And but Adam's – so after this vision, Adam's like, well, that looked like fun. Maybe things aren't so bad after all. And Michael's like, no, you're missing the point. Mm-hmm. Like, what they're doing is bad. And And soon they'll be swimming in tears. And he's talking about the flood. And here Adam's like, oh man, all this comes from women's wily ways. And Michael says, and also man's effeminate slackness.
Yeah.
So he implies that it starts when men don't keep women in line like they should.
Right.
Yeah, this is another reason I personally am not a fan of this book. Not only are they is this book super didactic, like, you know, Michael's not chatting with Adam like Raphael, like they're not speculating. Michael is lecturing him. You know, he's even got a PowerPoint. That's the visions. Yeah. But okay, so not only is Michael being this like kind of like dry lecturing professor, but also the stuff that he's lecturing is really problematic.
Yeah, again, this Dartmouth site that I'm reading out here says that Adam's disobedience, according to Milton, is also a failure of the self-esteem proper to manliness. So he just wasn't being manly enough, and a failure to esteem Eve's beauty for what it is, right? So women are beautiful and men are powerful. Those are the masculine and feminine ends of the spectrum.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know.
I mean, like, and he's been called out on that by everyone now, but like, cause Eve was like, aren't you the man? Like you should have stopped me from, you know, and then the son says that to him and now Michael's saying that to him. So we then get another vision. One man, this is Adam's seventh descendant. That would be Enoch, is in the midst of a battlefield and he's trying to persuade the two armies to stop fighting, but they both try to kill him. But he is taken up to heaven by God before that happens. And that's that, you know, famous example of how Enoch, quote, walked with God and did not die, but was simply taken up to heaven. And we go from this vision directly into another one of Noah, similarly speaking out against all the evil in the world. Only here, in addition to saving Noah and his family, God punishes the rest of the world with the flood. And Michael uses these examples to show that those of his children who remain true to God will be saved.
All right, yeah, that takes you up to Noah. Adam, what do you think of that?
Yeah.
Adam's probably like, well, that's a good place to stop.
Yeah.
It was a long story. Eve's back at home sleeping.
Right. She's getting the best sleep of her life. Man. But no, like folks, that's it. That is book number 11. What did we think of this book, Keenan?
Again, I like looking into the human nature of where this might these things might come from. So, like Adam is warned that you know, this knowledge is going to make him like God, and it's like, oh, well, that's not a bad thing at all. And then they discover that, oh, now we know things like nakedness and shame and sin and death, and that's one thing. But then he's like, and also you will get gray hair. And he's like, no, gray hair. it's merciful. He doesn't tell Adam he'll, you know, become male pattern baldness.
Right, right.
I'll worship whoever you want.
Yes. save me. And when you're out there wandering and you're lost, you will not have the humility to ask for directions. No.
Well, we're very lucky. You're 40 and you have a luscious head of hair.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. Yes, yes. My hairline has maybe receded like a millimeter and a half. And I complained to my boyfriend about it. I'm like, oh, I'm losing that. And he's like, you look the exact same. It's like, no, it's like a millimeter back. But no, but he does say, no, I don't see anything you're saying, but I totally understand why that would be terrifying to me.
I'm convinced that somebody messed up upstairs and I was supposed to be bald like long, long ago and they just haven't figured it out. And I'm just pushing my luck every single day. Like, and one of these days I'm just going to wake up and I'm going to like lift my head from the pillow and my hair is just going to remain on the pillow. Yeah. And that's going to be it.
Yeah.
I'm going to be like, well, this was coming. You know,
all that pride you had in your luscious head.
All
of
that
hair.
Pride.
Yeah.
Yep. But yeah, folks, that's book 11.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, without further ado, let's jump into the last book. Okay, this is the final book of Paradise Lost here. This is the argument at the top of book 12. The angel Michael continues from the flood to relate what shall succeed. Then, in the mention of Abraham, comes by degrees to explain who that seed of the woman shall be, which was promised Adam and Eve in the fall, his incarnation, death, resurrection, and ascension, the state of the church till his second coming. Adam, greatly satisfied and recomforted by these relations and promises, descends the hill with Michael, wakens Eve, who all this while had slept but with gentle dreams composed to quietness of mind and submission. Michael. I don't know. We're going to get to that. I read it another way.
Okay.
I read it another way. Michael, in either hand, leads them out of paradise, the fiery sword waving behind them, and the cherubim taking their stations to guard the place. So yeah, folks, it's another Bible history class taught by Michael. Again, very different from Raphael. When Raphael is relating the war in heaven, or he's like theorizing about the nature of the universe, you get the sense that Adam and Eve are invited to join in like friends. But Michael is a teacher. In fact, Adam refers to him as a heavenly instructor. And it's not like a straight up lecture. He does facilitate and guide Adam, but there's this like separation that wasn't there with Raphael.
Leonardo leads, Donatello does machines.
Right.
Wait, his name's not Leonardo.
or Donatello. Keenan, you named the two turtles who are not either of these angels.
I'm sorry. I'm already seeing him as Leonardo.
He's very Leonardo-y. Yeah.
Yes. Sorry.
And once again, no Milton up top. We pick right back up with Adam and Michael, who notices that Adam's mortal sight is waning. So he switches from the visions to just telling Adam what's going to happen, which I don't know why Milton decided to do that. Like, you're writing this.
Yeah.
You can, like, it's not like you ran out of the magic. You can create, you can have Michael create more visions. Unless, like maybe he got tired of, like, having to write all these, like, descriptive visions. And he's like, it's like, I'm just going to have Michael tell it.
Or his daughters were like, Dad, these are really lame.
Yeah, it is like...
you coming in here and...
just have Michael say it.
Yeah,
you know?
Show, don't tell, Dad.
Exactly, right? That's what I was trying to do. Tell, don't show, now. But that also made me think of how, like... because you and I are teachers, Keenan, and we make these PowerPoints and these lessons on our own time during our lunch, or sometimes like we stay late and sometimes there's not enough free hours in the week to do all that extra unpaid work. Right. And now we got Michael and he's like, look, I was in the middle of making this next PowerPoint, but then we had to cast a third of heaven's children into hell. It's been a really busy week. I'm just going to tell you what happens. Okay, please take notes.
Well, the child in me is looking at book 12's first sentence after the argument. As one who in his journey baits at noon is how I read this first line. But this must mean something else.
Keenan, are you sure?
As one who in his journey baits at noon, though bent on speed. So here the archangel paused
a half hour lunch break
betwixt the world destroyed and the world restored.
That's what it feels like sometimes.
But I guess it is as one who in his journey abates at no one. I don't even know what that means. So
abates. Oh, abates like stops
at no one. As one who in his journey stops at no one.
Wait. Are we sure it's no? Like, could that just be noon?
At noon, N-O-O-N-E.
Yeah, Milton's a fucked up spelling before.
Well, then I'm choosing to read this as one who in his journey masturbates at noon. We can just make up what we wanted. Make sure. Assumptions. All right, yeah. All right, well, that's how I read this, and then I didn't understand any of the rest of this, so you go ahead.
Yeah.
I'm glad we're in this together.
Yeah.
because I could just read that and snicker through the rest of my lunch uh-huh. and not really understand uh-huh. or even really try to understand, to be honest.
Well, you snicker. I'm busy baiting. I think what he's saying is mm-hmm. one who takes a break at noon, who abates at noon.
My eyes have gone down the entirety of this book. Uh-huh. And I've understood maybe two or three sentences, and then you tell me what I've actually read. So that's fine. Might as well be how we end this, because I was like, no, this time for our last book, I'm going to really do this.
Well, I mean, Keenan, that's the journey, you know? Like, we're trying to see with eyes unclouded, mm-hmm. but they're so clouded with bait residue.
Well, so I'm going to say I've read this book now.
Yes. Oh, okay. No, I'm going to say that too. Yeah.
Okay, good. But you certainly have read it
I've been
in a
saying that.
Different way than I have.
No, Keenan, it's the, like, have you learned nothing? It's the easiest thing in the world to say you've read something.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, did you ever read Anna Karenina?
Oh, yeah. Loved it. Did a book report in high school, yeah. Where I interviewed her.
Okay. All right. So I'm looking forward to you telling me what and you know what? This, I understand that these two books are you know, cliff notes of the Bible. Mm-hmm, so every mm-hmm. once in a while, I'll be like, I know later on we're talking about slavery in Egypt. I do understand right. that, but that is mm-hmm. about the yeah. extent of what I'm able to understand.
Yeah. These are like folks, like I said, you know, Rogers backs me up with this as well. These are notoriously hard books. Mm-hmm. It's a little tough, partially because no Satan anymore. But also partially because, yeah, it is like it's a retelling of Bible history,
right?
You know, and that's so why we're going to be.
I could tell he's talking about the Bible. I just don't know what he's saying about it. You know.
Well, I think if we start at the baiting at noon,
that's all I understand. Okay. Anyways, my whole point is I'm looking forward to you telling me what I read.
Oh, great.
Please,
great.
Please, please, please.
Well, don't put all your faith in me because I'm, okay. So the next story mm-hmm. that Michael tells Adam is mm-hmm. The Tower of Babel. Mm-hmm. And like Dante, Milton credits Nimrod mm-hmm. with the building of the tower.
So that's that monster. He turns him into a giant, right? He was a great right. hunter, and then Dante turns him into a giant. So Milton is being influenced by Dante?
I'm actually not sure. Hmm. So it seems to be the popular thing that Nimrod was the builder of the Tower of Babel. Mm-hmm. That's why he was like in that circle of hell in Dante's Inferno to begin right. with, but then Dante also made him a giant mm-hmm, for some mm-hmm. reason, which I don't know if Milton is doing that. I think I think the giant thing is just Dante like adding a little bit more spice mm-hmm. to an already like Mandela effect thing where like people are saying that Nimrod built the tower. Milton is running with the tower part, maybe not the giant part.
Gotcha.
So folks, you know, we know the story of the Tower of Babel, right? God makes them all speak different languages so they can't finish the tower. The tower, I think, was intended to like reach heaven. And I don't know if that's like to besiege heaven mm-hmm. or if it was just to like be as high as heaven or whatever. But, you know, God's having none of that. Mm-hmm. And that's the invention of languages, right? Mm-hmm. But the thing that Adam takes from this story, he's upset that some men, he's talking about Nimrod, having dominion over others. Specifically, he thinks Nimrod is like a cruel ruler. Mm-hmm. And again, I really don't like Michael's answer here because it seems to be justifying slavery. Mm-hmm. He says God sends unjust rulers to rule some groups who cannot rule themselves mm-hmm. because they lack reason. I think Milton is trying to explain how tyrants come to power, like, you know, like Caesar or Caligula or whatever. Mm-hmm. But the way he says it, and also because this is the 17th century, it makes me wonder if he's also justifying slavery. Like he's saying that some people are just asking to be ruled over is basically what he's saying.
I think it's kind of the other way. I think that the arguments for the divine right of kings were then borrowed or you know, appropriated by people justifying slavery. But those arguments have been around, I think, since there were like five people and one guy was like, I'm the strongest, so, you know, I have to rule you in this tribe.
True,
I think those
true.
Arguments have been around forever. I don't think that that's, again, I don't understand what I'm reading, but I don't think that's what they're saying.
Okay.
But you're right. Like it's, that's the kind of thing that people would say about slavery.
Yes. And it has been said about slavery. That's
yes.
A, you know.
Especially as the abolition movement in England was happening, which I think is this is a little too early for that, I think.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. So, but that's what I'm saying is that Milton is writing this at a time when slavery is the norm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I agree with you about like, okay, yeah, the original meaning of that is that divine providence, right? You know, mm-hmm. granted to like a certain individual to rule over a kingdom or something like that. But how is Milton writing it right here?
Mm-hmm.
Like, is he saying that same thing, or is he like, oh, and also, you know, certain groups of people, blah, blah, blah.
I don't think so, because Milton would be writing this in the earliest days of like English style transatlantic slavery. I don't think, and I could be completely wrong, I'm not an expert at this at all, but I don't believe that it was in the public consciousness in the same way.
Interesting.
Because, you know, people knew about slavery. Obviously, slavery is ancient, but right. like transatlantic slavery, which is different from the slavery that existed in the old world, where you were enslaved because your army lost a battle, and so you were enslaved, and you could potentially, you know, terrible things could happen to you, and you could get killed, but you could potentially get out of that or buy your freedom back or be traded, and like if you had children, they weren't slaves and that kind of thing. But transatlantic slavery, which racialized it, which is entirely different from the old ways, like I don't know if that would have been in the consciousness of people like in, you know, 20 or 40 years after Elizabeth. I don't think so.
Interesting.
In England, at least. Since Portugal and Spain, where it was a little bit different, I think that might have been.
Yeah.
But I don't know. That's something to think about.
Yeah. From here, Michael focuses on the Israelites, starting with Abraham, from whom he says a savior will eventually be born. He moves quickly through the stories of Jacob, Joseph, and the enslavement of the Israelites. He does not sing any of the songs.
Mm-hmm.
He talks. Thank you. You know, it was red and yellow and blue and yeah, no time for that.
It would take too long.
Yeah. He talks about the rise of Moses and the exodus from Egypt, the receiving of the commandments, the establishing of the laws. Mm-hmm. And here Adam interjects and he asks why men need so many laws. And Michael basically reiterates that man is fallen and things which they would normally do or not do have to be made explicitly into laws now.
Mm-hmm.
And even then, they still cannot be saved until the Savior appears.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Michael continues. He tells about Joshua leading them into the promised land, talks about all the kings, including David and Solomon, right? Ah, Solomon, yeah. who built the great temple.
Mm-hmm.
And here Adam's like, but I heard on this podcast, Michael's like, no, shut up. And he talks about how after this, the kings fall away from God and begin fighting amongst themselves, how they got occupied by Rome. And here is where the Messiah will be born of a virgin to save all mankind. And Adam gets excited. He wants to hear about the epic battle between Jesus and Satan. But Michael explains that it won't be a literal battle.
Boo.
And I just see Adam just being like, aww. But no, like he explains Jesus is going to become human and die, mm-hmm. taking the curse of death upon himself and erasing the debt which Adam and Eve incurred. Mm-hmm. And even then, it's not over. Jesus will send out disciples to further strengthen people for the spiritual battle that they will fight all their lives. And again, it's like the spiritual battle is like in their hearts. Aww. Aww. Until Jesus comes back at the end of days. And after this, the earth will be swallowed in fire. But yeah, so after this, the earth will be an even greater paradise than Eden.
Mm. That's interesting. Well, that makes sense. Yeah. I guess I hadn't thought of it that way.
Right.
I guess when I think of these stories, I don't think about like Eden and then the heaven of Revelation or whatever. I don't
right.
just jump from there to there.
Yeah. Like there's so much stuff mm-hmm. that I either never knew about mm-hmm. or I just have not thought much about. But yeah, also that idea of like, so there's gonna be heaven on earth. There's gonna be another Eden.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So then what is like, are we going to like be able to go from Eden to heaven? Like, mm-hmm. like at will or mm-hmm. yeah.
All right. Well, that's good.
Yeah. There you go.
That's nice. Yeah. What about Satan?
There are like, I have heard of certain religions, which either started out with the idea of Satan being forgiven mm-hmm. or have like the, you know, these kids today, you know, starting to talk about it. I'll have to look that up mm-hmm. that, cause that's always kind of like interested me as well. Mm. That's like it's like, oh yeah. It's like everyone's getting forgiven.
I just never thought about it. Know.
Yeah. No. That is, that does bring to mind. There's, so remember that story that I keep on bringing up in the Quran where, mm-hmm. Iblis refuses to bow to Adam. Mm-hmm. There is an interpretation of that, which is actually really interesting. So it's not that, according to this interpretation, it's not that he's refusing to bow to Adam out of pride. Like, I'm not going to bow to this mud man. Right. I'm a creature of light. It's that I'm not going to bow to anyone except God.
Okay.
And it's this, like, if you Google it, folks, it's this something like, it's like, Shaitan or Iblis's loyalty to God that makes him refuse to even partially worship Adam.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. So it's this food for thought, folks. And now our brains can handle it because we've eaten that that fruit. So yeah, so all of that is foretold by Michael. And Adam reflects that the goodness which ultimately comes from all of this seems even better than the simple goodness man would have had if they had stayed in Eden.
Right.
And we now get the sense that, like a teacher, Michael was guiding him towards this conclusion all along. He says that mm-hmm. as long as he and his children stay true to God, it will be. Mm-hmm. And so the visions and the foretelling is over. And so they descend the hill. Mm-hmm. And Adam goes back to their home to wake Eve up and mm-hmm. tell her everything, you know, that he heard, which, you know, she could have just gone with you guys.
That's right. Mm.
But I wonder if Milton is doing something here because he gets home and Eve is already awake. Mm-hmm. And she says, I already know everything. God spoke to me in my dream. And beyond that, Milton doesn't elaborate what God said to her. But scholars are saying that the way Milton writes it, it sounds like God visited Eve in her dream and told her that, quote, her place is to follow behind Adam. But again, I don't see that. That was even how Milton explained it in the argument. Mm-hmm. Remember?
Yeah.
Kenan's like,
submission.
Yeah. But listeners, you tell me. This is exactly what he says. So Adam gets back, finds Eve awake, and she says, quote, whence thou returnst, and whither whenst, I know, for God is also in sleep, and dreams advise, which he hath sent propitious. Some great good presaging, since with sorrow and heart's distressed wearied, I fell asleep. But now, lead on, in me is no delay. With thee to go is to stay here. Without thee here to stay is to go hence unwilling. Thou to me art all the things under heaven. So to me, it sounds like she's saying, I already know what you guys were talking about because mm-hmm. God told me to. So let's go. I'm ready. I love you, and I'd rather go with you into exile than stay here in paradise alone. Where we go together will be paradise. Mm. So that's what I'm reading. I don't see anything about, like, she's not like, oh, God came to me in the dream and told me that I am your inferior and I must, like, follow behind you. I don't see that.
Hmm.
And I can see, like, scholars, 18th and 19th century scholars, like, being like, well, obviously that's what that means. But I see her saying, yeah, let's go.
Like, I'm choosing to go.
Exactly.
I was given the same evidence with the so what? So if she was up in the hill with Michael and Adam and was presented the same thing and Adam said yes, then she might just say yes because Adam's saying yes. But here she's had a similar idea and she has the agency to say yes.
Right.
And I got to hear it faster than you. God explained it to me much quicker than you had to be given example after example, generations upon begets.
Exactly. So she like Adam had to go up there and get lectured by Michael. Mm-hmm. She spoke to God.
Right.
Like in the dream. And God must what I'm assuming is God told her the same thing. And she's like, okay, yeah, I'm all caught up. And I'm deciding, let's go. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm going to stay with you.
Okay.
And I don't know. I listeners, if you read that differently, please, tell me that I'm wrong.
But maybe Milton read it differently because he summarized it with subservience.
Right? He must. Yeah, because he's the right. Yeah, it must be, so my interpretation must be accidental.
Oh, well, I mean, you don't need Milton's permission to read what
exactly, he said. Right? He's dead. Yeah, so that's how I'm reading it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So they are escorted out of Eden. It's a little sad as they, quote, make their solitary way. That's the last line of the poem. Mm-hmm. But there's a little bit of hope as Milton notes that they are walking hand in hand. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that, folks, is Paradise Lost.
All right.
That's it. That is all of it. So, Keenan, what did you think of this whole thing?
Well, devil bad.
Uh-huh.
Devil do bad to man.
Mm-hmm. Devil sexy.
No one say devil not sexy. Yeah, I am surprised how much time we spend with a variety of different viewpoints. So it's not really from Adam and Eve's point of view, and it's not really from Satan's point of view. It's also from God's point of view and from some of the angels. It's tough. Shakespeare's pretty modern. By that I mean we base a lot of our modern storytelling on Shakespeare.
Right.
The idea that we could bring Abdiel in for three books and then he punches the devil in the face and then we never hear about him again. Very foreign for my taste. But I'm glad I quote unquote read it. it's so interesting to see how much of our ideas of what happened in Genesis or what just happened in the evolution of man from wild beast to person, how tied that is into what what Satan wanted and his own, emo backstory. I like that stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. All in all, I'm really, really happy that, I have finally kind of gone through this thing with a fine tooth comb. Mm-hmm. I did read it in college, finally, mm-hmm. but there's a lot of stuff that I'm picking up, in this reading that I really enjoyed. And I hope you guys did too out there.
Well, we spent 11 weeks on this. I mean, in college you spend a week or two.
Right. Exactly. Right. So not to push our luck here, but I have just gone ahead and read the sequel to this, mm-hmm. Paradise Regained. It's in the same little audiobook bundle that mm-hmm. I was listening to, and it was so quick. I was driving to the gym and I was halfway through mm-hmm. it. And then I finished it driving back from the gym. It's four books and the entirety of those four books is like half the size of the of book 10
right.
in this thing. So it's really, really short. And we got Satan again. It's mostly like he's in all of the books, and it's basically Jesus and Satan in the desert going back and forth. So I wanted to end this whole thing with a little bit of Satan. So we're also going to cover Paradise Regained, but it's going to be much, much shorter. It's going to be like probably 1 to 2 weeks. I think we, if we cover like, I think we can cover, it's four books. I think we can cover like 2 books a week probably.
Cool. And this is John Milton writing this sequel, right? So it's not like J.J. Abrams doing Star Wars 7 and then Rian Johnson coming in and erasing all that. And, right. and then they had to bring Abrams back to re-erase what Johnson had written.
Somehow Satan returned.
All right. So John, yeah, I think it's fair to continue on with it. This is the rest of John Milton's story. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not like, you know, like Purgatorio and Paradiso, which would be like, way too long to explore. Mm-hmm. This is, you know, this is just like, you know, four little books that, that I think we can wrap this up with, and then end on a Satan note, I think. Mm-hmm.
And my version has some more, Doré, drawings. In
yes. Yeah. Yeah. So we'll get a look at those as well. So yeah, keep an eye out for that on your feeds. Yeah. We'll be talking about Paradise Regained.
Well, like when we were starting Paradise Lost, the question I have is, who regains paradise? Or yeah. someone or something regains paradise?
Or somehow. it's just open to interpretation. No. But yeah, folks, that is Paradise Lost. And that is also all of my notes. Keenan, is there anything else?
No, I think we got it.
All right, folks, this has been another excellent Exorcist Minute. I've been Lester Ryan Clark. You can reach me on all the socials as Lester Ryan Clark.
And I've been Keenan Diaz. You could find me on Instagram and Letterboxd at Howdy Keenan.
Yeah, we got our listener group, Compelling Conversations. Go check that out and request to join, and we'll let you in here with us. Thank you so much to everyone who has shared the show by word of mouth or on social media, and a big thank you to everyone who has given us a 5-star ratings on iTunes or Spotify or wherever you listen to our show. We really appreciate it. It's going to help our little podcast grow and find more cool people like you. Mm-hmm. Okay, Keenan, are you thinking what I'm thinking?
I think I am, Lester.
Folks, until next time, the power of capybaras compels you.
So that's the Pixar capybara, but like if it was the Illumination version or the DreamWorks version, there'd be a bad guy who's trying to take over the world with the power of fuzz. I will collect all the fuzzy and I will rule the world. Uh-huh. And Corey and his buddy have to break into the factory and there's a heist or something. Mm-hmm. They always have heists in those movies.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And if it was like a Don Bluth thing. You know, somebody has a dark past. Somebody died.
And there's all these shots of the capybara's hands, and they're fucking disgusting.
Yeah, yeah. And the good guys are somehow uglier than the bad guys.
That's right.
Yeah. Oh, this is a capybara.
You didn't know what a capybara was?
I was thinking, wait, what is the other thing called? Hang on.
Capybaras are the world's largest rodents, and they live in South America, and they take baths.
Oh, I was thinking of a quokka.
Oh, quokkas, they're great. No, but capybaras are real chill.
They are.
You have all these, because they're not predated by any animals.
Uh-huh.
So they just hang out with, like, crocodiles and and sea turtles and all sorts of things.
That is a Pixar movie waiting to happen.
Yeah, you can basically just Google capybara and some animal and you'll find them.
Let's see. Capybara
and monkeys I found here.
And snake. Let's see. Well, Ooh, I don't.
Oh. Well, I take that back. Well, we found one thing that Kanabaras are predated by.
Yeah.
Well, sorry, everybody.
And now I have fallen. I wish I didn't see this. Oh boy. But I'm telling you, I'm telling you guys, don't Google capybara and snake.
That's the one. No. But I have capybara and beavers, capybaras and monkeys, capybaras and alligators. They're friends.
Oh. I'm gonna take your word for it. I'm not gonna Google.